This is the Soulful PR Podcast with Janet Murray, episode 245.
Welcome to the Soulful PR Podcast. Tune in every week for practical tips, strategies, and case studies that will help you get media coverage for your business. And now, here's your host, Janet Murray.
Hello, and welcome to the show. In this episode, I've got a great interview for you with Suzanne Dibble. So Suzanne is a legal expert and she specialises in GDPR. So they're the new data protection regulations that come into force in May 2018. Now they affect you wherever you are in the world, regardless of whether you're based in the EU or not, if you're doing business online, and even if you just hold the email addresses of people in the EU, then this will affect you. So you definitely do need to listen. Now, one thing I do want to say before we go into the interview is that this is a very big subject. So in a 30-40 minute interview, all we can really do is cover the basics that you need to know to be compliant. Now, I posted about this in my Facebook group and said that I was going to be doing this interview with Suzanne, and I got loads of questions. And some of the questions that you sent me were quite specific about you and your business and your individual circumstances. So we've tried to cover off as much as we possibly can, just to make sure that you understand what are the key things that you need to know to become compliant. But I'd say that if you want to go deeper, or if you have got some quite specific questions about your business and your circumstances, Suzanne has a fantastic Facebook group. It's called GDPR for Online Entrepreneurs. So it's GDPR for Online Entrepreneurs. If you do have more specific questions or you do need to go deeper, then I definitely recommend that you join her group. As I'm recording this episode, it's only been open for a couple of weeks, but it's grown from nothing to, I think, well over 7,000 in that time, which shows how important this issue is. And Suzanne herself has committed to doing daily Facebook Lives in the run-up to these new requirements or these new data protection laws coming into force, which is really, really good of her. And she's also been bringing in experts to help her with that. Now, I wouldn't normally endorse or recommend any resources on the show, but Suzanne does talk at the end of this episode about some resources that she's created to help you get compliant with GDPR. I've seen them. I know that they're really good. And there is an offer which ends on Good Friday. So as I'm recording this episode, then this episode hopefully will get it out before Good Friday 2018. So if you're listening to the episode when it goes out and you're thinking you'd like to get your hands on these resources, don't hang about, because you may well still be able to get this special offer on Suzanne's resources. And she talks about them right at the end of this interview. They're really good, and I think they're well worth the investment. And as I say, I wouldn't normally endorse any kind of resources on the show, but I think in this case, definitely worth getting your hands on. So after that rather lengthy intro, I think it's time to get on with the main part of the show. So joining me on the show today is Suzanne Dibble. So Suzanne is an expert in small business law with experience working for well-known brands like Virgin and ITV. She's also a specialist in data protection and has recently launched some really excellent resources aimed at helping small business owners to get compliant with the new data protection regulations known as GDPR. And they come into force in May, and they're really important for us all, and I think not just if we're in the UK. So I thought it would be great to get Suzanne on the show to talk us through what we need to know about that. So welcome to the show, Suzanne.
Thank you for having me. Delighted to be here to share my sensible, balanced approach to GDPR.
Fantastic. So might you be able to start, for those people listening who may not know what it is or be a bit shaky, just by giving us a little bit of an overview of what GDPR is, why it's important, and why it's also something that you may need to know about even if you're not based in the UK.
Okay, so what is GDPR all about? Well, it is all about, in essence, data protection. So if you are, as a small business owner, are processing personal data, whether that's your customers or your prospects or your clients, that's things like their names and email addresses, things like that, something that will identify a living individual, then GDPR affects you. And it also affects you if you're outside of the EU, if to the extent that you are processing the personal data of EU residents. So I've had many conversations with people in the United States, in Australia, in Canada, who think that GDPR doesn't apply to them. Well, it does. To the extent that you have people on your list that are from the EU, customers that are from the EU, employees in the EU, anybody that you process their data in the EU, then this applies to that data. even to the extent of if you have people visiting your website from the EU and you're able to identify that person from an IP address or a cookie, then it applies. So I think it's the message is slowly sinking in with people outside of the EU that the regulation applies. But more than that, what they're finding is that they are losing customers because they're not complying with it. And I'll talk a little bit more about that later on. So GDPR, the first thing that I want to say, and the reason that I said at the start that I bring a sensible, balanced approach is because if you have heard about GDPR, then chances are you've also heard about the scary headlines that go with it. In terms of the, if you don't comply with GDPR, you're going to be fined 20 million euros. Now, I want to say right up front that you really do not need to lose sleep over GDPR as a small business owner. There are certain things that you need to be thinking about, certain sensible steps that you need to be taking. But if you do that, the chances of you being fined 20 million or fined anything at all, or there being any remote sanction is very slim. So it's not to say you can ignore the legislation, absolutely not. But please don't panic yourself about what is going to come into force, because really, you know, GDPR is there to, yes, it absolutely reflects the seriousness with which data is regarded in the modern world. I mean, if you think about why GDPR has come into force, it's because our existing data protection legislation is now 20 years old. And of course, a lot has changed in the way that we process data, in the types of data that we hold, and privacy aspects. So in my view, beyond time that we have this new increasing emphasis on protecting people's data, The Economist recently said that data is now the most valuable asset in the world. It's not oil anymore, it's data. And if you just look at what's happened recently with Cambridge Analytica and Facebook, and how, you know, this is, you know, data that's influencing elections, you know, you can't get more impactful than that. So A, it's about time that regulation caught up with what's actually going on with data. But B, it's actually a really good opportunity, I think, for small business owners to look at what they're doing with their, particularly with their marketing. And marketing is just one aspect of GDPR that we need to look at. But certainly it gives us the impetus to look at what we're doing with our marketing, look at how we're treating our lists, and look at better list hygiene and making sure that we're telling people what we're going to send them and doing regular checks on whether they're liking what we're sending them.
I'm really pleased that you've said, you know, you've kind of said these are kind of sensible precautions and sensible ways of doing business, because I'm seeing a lot of people getting very, very panicky to the point where people are saying, I was going to start my email list, but maybe because of GDPR, like now I'm not going to do it. And I feel that these seem to be like sensible steps and precautions that all of us should have been thinking about anyway. And so thank you for saying that for starters.
Yeah, I mean, I've had people in my Facebook group say that I was thinking of closing my business down because she was so worried about how to comply with GDPR. So please don't lose sleep at night. It's really, you know, the fines are there to catch the people that are doing large scale systematic processing of personal data and sensitive data. And the chances of you as a small business owner doing any of that is very slim. If you're sensible with data and, you know, think about it from the other side of the fence, think about you as a consumer and you giving your data to people. How would you like your data to be treated? I always think that if you think about that and you comply with that principle, then chances are you're going to be absolutely fine. There's more to it than that, but I think if you keep that overarching principle in mind, then that's definitely a good starting point.
Fantastic. And when we talk about data, actually, I was asking my Facebook group earlier on, I was saying I was going to be talking to you, what questions do people have? And somebody said, well, what do we mean by data? What do we actually class as data? Can you talk a bit about that?
Absolutely. It's pretty much everything that we process, but I'll give you the definition. So personal data is defined in GDPR as any information relating to an identified or identifiable natural person who's known as the data subject. And an identifiable natural person is one who can be identified directly or indirectly, in particular by reference to an identifier such as a name, an identification number, a location number, an online identifier, which is where IP addresses and cookies come into it, or to one or more factors specific to the blah, 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 it goes on. But pretty much any data that allows you to identify a natural person is included. There's also a category of data, a special category of data for sensitive data, and that is for data that needs an extra level of protection. So it's things like health data. For example, lots of people in my group are health professionals, so they have to be very careful about that. It's data like your religious beliefs, your political persuasion, your sexual orientation, things like that. So there is slightly different rules about how you process sensitive data. But pretty much any data that you process from somebody else, any data that somebody else gives you, pretty much is going to be caught by GDPR.
So emails, phone numbers, addresses, I'm thinking about things that I've got. They're probably the main things that I've got. But you're saying that depending on what industry and you might have other more sensitive data.
Yeah, absolutely right.
Fantastic. Okay, so for what does this mean for small business owners? I'm going to break it into to two steps, just thinking about the questions that people have been raising in my group all the time and asking me in terms of getting compliant. So one question people are asking me a lot is, and this is a question that I've been considering a lot as well with my email list, I've got 15,000 on my list. What about email addresses, for example, that we already hold? So does somebody like me, do I need to send an email to the whole of my list, even though I know that I've been getting people's permission for all the time I've had an email list, I've been getting people's permission to get on that list, but do I need to email my list and verify that they understand why they're on the list and want to stay on the list? This is a question that's been coming up a lot.
Yes, it's one of the main questions that I'm asked too. The thing to bear in mind with GDPR is that there is a higher standard of consent required. Now, the first thing to work out is whether consent is actually the appropriate lawful ground of processing, because consent is not the only ground. Okay, there are other grounds of processing that includes things like legitimate interests, processing because of a contractual obligation, processing because of a legal obligation, and more. So consent is not the only ground for processing. For marketing purposes and email marketing purposes, well, for marketing purposes, you're really looking at consent or legitimate interests generally. With legitimate interests, it's going to be much easier to rely on that ground, which is, it's not black and white, it's a bit of a grey area. And I'd always recommend that people carry out a legitimate interest assessment form. And I can tell you how you can get hold of that later. But it's not black and white. And it's a balancing test between your legitimate interests as the data controller and the rights and freedoms of the data subject. And it's about what they would reasonably expect to receive. So if you're marketing to existing customers, for example, and you're marketing to them about an enhancement to a product or service that they've already bought, then it would be much easier to argue that the processing is done under legitimate interests. Now, if you're emailing a prospect completely out of the blue, it's going to be more difficult to argue that. And added complexity for email marketing and electronic marketing is that you also need to comply with the privacy and electronic communications regulations, which state that for individual subscribers, for non-solicited direct marketing, you need to have their prior consent. And individuals include sole traders and partnerships. Okay, so typically it's going to be, unless you're purely sending and you're sure that you're sending purely to limited companies, then typically you're going to be needing to get consent. So aside from the legalities, I always think permission-based marketing is so much more effective.
So if I look at my email list, for example, so everybody that I've got on my email list is there because they have signed up for an opt-in, so they've opted into one of my marketing freebies. So it could be a free challenge or a free cheat sheet or something along the way. They might have come via a Facebook ad, but then they would have opted into something. Or they're a customer and they're on my list because they've bought. And I know a lot of my listeners will be in the same situation. I don't have anybody on my list that I've scraped their data from anywhere, or I've just added on my list because I've kind of just, you know, put their email. Do I still need to email my list and say, do you still want to be on my list? Basically, that's the question I think most people have.
Chances are yes. And I was just getting to explain that point. So as I say, if you can't rely on the legitimate interest ground, really the ground is consent. And the problem with GDPR is that it imposes a higher standard of consent. And the ICO have said, the ICO being the Information Commissioner's Office, who are our supervisory authority for data protection in the UK, they have said that if you have gathered your previous consents in line with GDPR, you don't need to go out and get fresh consent. Now, the chances of you having a GDPR compliant consent are very slim. Okay, because what you have to do with consent for GDPR is that you have to have a granularity of consent so that people can have genuine choice and control about what they're opting in for. So if you've accessed that data through a freebie, and as part of signing up for that freebie, you've then said, oh, and by the way, you're getting my marketing, then arguably that is not granular enough for the purposes of GDPR. Now, actually, on that particular point, I have spoken to the ICO and persuaded them that there was an argument to use the legitimate interest grounds for doing that, where you're sending them materials that are directly related to the opt-in that they've signed up for. Another member in my group phoned them up, asked them the same question and got a completely different answer. Okay, so my guidance in my group is go and get the fresh consent. And in my group, we had an interview with a re-engagement expert, because what you don't want to do is send an email and lose half your list. You know, you put a lot of money and time and effort into building that list. You don't want to lose 50, 75% or however many because they don't opt in ahead of GDPR. And that's another point to note, is that you need to get that re-opt in before the 25th of May, or you've kind of missed the boat by that point. And equally...
So I know we could go into a lot of detail into this, but if in terms of a re-engagement email, what would be an ideal kind of re-engagement email to send out to your list if you're in that situation, like somebody like me, basically?
Yeah. So what you don't want to do is on the 24th of May, just send that one email saying, do you want to opt in or out? Particularly if your list haven't heard from you for 6 months or whatever, because they're just not going to do anything. So what you want to do is ideally have a sequence of 4 or 5 emails that are delivering value. They're getting some kind of response from the list. So you might ask them a question or do a survey or send them some really quality information and say, here's what we're going to be sending you over the next 6 months, and really prime them to want them to stay on your list. So as I say, the interview in my group, there was about 5 different campaigns that Karen talked us through. So if people want to go and listen to that, then that would be a really good place to start.
Can you just give us the name of your group again for those who don't know it?
Yep, it's GDPR for Online Entrepreneurs. It's the biggest GDPR Facebook group on there. GDPR for Online Entrepreneurs.
Okay, fantastic.
So saying that, there's lots of people in there that aren't online. It's just now a you know, really well engaged group full of lots of different sectors and industries.
Fantastic. And so are you saying we do this re-engagement sequence first and then you send the email saying, do you want to stay on my list? Somebody in my group actually said, I got an email this morning actually from somebody I was subscribed to, just basically saying, do you want to stay on my list or not? It's quite interesting. And somebody said, well, how many times do you ask? You know, if you don't get a reply from somebody, does that mean that, you know, basically they haven't given their consent, you take them off? Can you ask them several times? How does it work with that?
Yeah, you can ask them several times. You know, it might just be, if they've not seen it, then, you know, yes, they might have just had too many emails to look at. If they've not seen it, you know, it's more than likely because you've gone straight into the spam folder because they've not engaged on previous emails. So then you'd have to look at more sophisticated re-engagement techniques, like retargeting through Facebook, get them to opt in to something again. And then, you know, once they've clicked on that and their email is activated, you know, then you can send them a re-engagement campaign. So, I mean, the problem is that if you've got low engagement levels now, chances are that your re-engagement campaign is going to go straight into their spam folder. So you might need to look at more sophisticated methods of re-engaging them.
And I guess like you're saying, it's a bit scary, because I was talking to somebody else who's got some, you know, decent sized list like me, and he was saying, well, you know, actually it sounds a bit scary, but even if we were to lose, I don't know, a third of our list or half of our list, but actually those people that we had on our list at the end of it are really super engaged people who really want to receive our stuff, then that's presumably a better situation
absolutely.
To be in, isn't it?
I think that's a better position, because what a lot of people don't realise with email marketing is if you have a list of 15,000, but 10,000 don't read it and don't engage with it, then that minimises the chances of those 5,000 who are interested in actually seeing it. And so you'd be much better to delete those 10,000, and then the 5,000 that really do want to see your materials will stand a much better chance of actually seeing them, and those emails not ending up in the spam filter.
Yeah, so this is, you know, this is potentially a really, really good thing. So the next thing to talk about is getting compliant with new subscribers onto your list. And I know this is something that we've been trying to work out. So I think what you're saying is that, so in the past, we might have been able to, we create a lead magnet or something, a nice kind of freebie for people to opt into, and then we might just start sending them our marketing emails, and we won't be able to do that now. I mean, this is something that we've been trying to work out in my team. So if someone signs up for, you know, one of my freebies, there's a good chance they are interested in hearing about my paid offers, but I can't just do that. I can't just kind of start sending them sales emails. How do we navigate this situation?
Yeah, well, as I say, the ICO have given 2 different answers on that and whether you could rely on legitimate interest. If you're feeling brave and you document your thought process, then you might be okay under legitimate interest. But best practice is to, when you're at the point of at the point where the data subject is leaving their personal data, i.e. in your opt-in box, then best practice is to have a a tick box underneath that opt-in that says, I would like to receive promotional offers about goods and services that you would like to receive promotional offers for goods and services that we feel may be of interest to you, something like that.
So we tried this out with a new opt-in that we were putting together, and it created a new problem for us. And I guess this is probably happening to everybody. So we did something like that where we had a new opt-in, and so we were getting people who were already on the list who were opting into this particular challenge or opt-in, whatever it was, and they were not ticking the second box. So that meant that we had people on the email list who had previously agreed to be on the email list, but when we got them to sign up for this opt-in, they were basically implicitly saying they didn't want to receive marketing emails from us. Does that kind of make sense? And that presented a bit of a challenge. Is that a challenge that other people are experiencing?
Yeah. And in theory, if they say they don't want to receive it, then, you know, if the box has been obvious and they've not ticked the box, then you should, in theory, remove them from that mailing list. And what you should also have, very importantly, is a link to your privacy policy at the point that the person is leaving their data. Everybody will need a new privacy policy, because even if you have it now, it needs to change for GDPR, because GDPR specifically provides for the numerous items that need to be included in there. There needs to be much more transparency in there about what you're doing with the data, any third parties that you're transferring the data to. And you might think, oh, I don't transfer my data to any third parties. Well, you probably do. You probably use Dropbox. You probably use MailChimp or AWeber or some other email service provider. You might use payroll providers. So that's part of the exercise in becoming GDPR compliant, is to do a data inventory. Look at what data you've got, where it's come from, what you're doing with it, what the purpose of processing is. That's something that you have to be transparent about now, and actually spell out what ground of processing you're relying on and what is the purpose of that processing. So privacy notices are going to be getting a lot longer. And what I'd really recommend that people don't do is go and copy one off the internet, because A, it could be wrong, and B, it could get you sued for infringing somebody else's intellectual property rights. And definitely don't have a go at trying to cobble it together yourself, because you won't get it right.
Okay.
So I'm going to tell you at the end how I can help you with that. But please, if you take one thing away from this this podcast, please don't go and try and, you know, steal one off the internet or cobble it together yourself, because you'll be wasting your time. You won't get it right.
Okay. And so I think what you're saying is we need to have a policy. And I guess, I mean, something that I've been thinking about as well, because I have different team members that work with me, and they have access not to all of my storage data or storage areas that I use. I use Google Drive and Dropbox and different things, but I guess it's going through the people that you work with as well, and seeing who's got access to what, and making sure that that's all documented and all above board, I guess.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, that comes down more to the data security side of it, and knowing exactly what processing is going on in the organisation. So yes, it's very important that businesses are on top of that.
And are there any insurances that we need to make sure that we've got in place as small business owners?
I believe that there is an extension of cover for the civil claims that can arise under GDPR. One thing that has changed is that data subjects can now bring claims directly against a data controller. So I think as consumers become more savvy and understand their rights under GDPR, we're going to see a lot more claims, complaints, because they can also complain to the regulatory authorities, and people exercising their rights a lot more. So, for example, in terms of subject access requests, the right to be forgotten, etc. So yes, there is insurance for civil claims, but not for the criminal side of it. So if the ICO investigate you and for some reason decide to fine you, then you won't get cover for that.
Right. Okay. And in terms of the policies that you need, are there any sort of, you know, other kind of three or four specific policies that you need to have in place in your business to make sure that you can demonstrate that you're compliant?
Yes. So a data retention policy is a good idea, because one of the principles of GDPR is data minimization, in terms of not taking more data than you need, and also storage limitation. So looking regularly at whether data is obsolete and needs to be deleted. Obviously, there are a number of areas of data that you need to keep for a certain number of years for legal or regulatory reasons, or, you know, or even contractual. Because, for example, people can bring a claim under contract for 6 years, which is the limitation period. So you'd want to be able to keep any contractual documents and any emails that would relate to a contractual dispute or anything like that. You'd want to keep them for a certain period of time. So, yeah, a data retention policy needs to be in place too. We've obviously talked about the privacy policy itself. If you've got employees, there's a lot of policies that need to be put in place with employees. You'd need a data monitoring policy, an acceptable use policy, probably something like a home working policy, a contractor policy. So there's a number of policies which it's beyond the scope of this podcast to go into for that. But I've put together a pack of documents that I feel is all that small business owners need to become GDPR compliant, and the relevant policies in there, certainly the privacy policy and the data retention policy, will very much help people with putting those policies into place.
Okay, so obviously this is a big subject, so all we can really do in this podcast episode is kind of just sort of dip into the key things, which I think we've covered. So where can we find you and find your resources if we want to go deeper?
So the first place that I recommend people go and check out is my group, which is brilliant. We've got we've been set up for four and a bit weeks, I think, and we've got over 7,000 members in the group, really engaged, asking lots of brilliant questions that are testing my grey matter, that's for sure. But a really engaged group. I do interviews in there with various different experts. I can't answer all the questions in there because I think I would go mad, but I answer certainly questions that I think have a general application. I do free daily videos that I've committed to do until GDPR comes into force on the 25th of May. So that's a really good starting point. And then if people look in the pinned post of that group, that will direct you to a free checklist, which is very comprehensive and tells you exactly what you need to be thinking about. And also there is details in there for my GDPR pack, which if people are fortunate to be listening to this before Good Friday.
Yes, it's actually going out on Good Friday, actually, but I can possibly, okay. If I can get my editor to turn it around a bit quick, we might be able to get it up a little bit earlier so people can take advantage, but go on.
Okay, so if they can buy before Good Friday, then the price of the pack is just £97, and that includes 20 legal documents and checklists that you'll need at least some of them to be compliant. Basically, everything that I thought of that would help you become compliant is in that pack. And the price is £97 as an introductory price, and it's going up to £147 on Good Friday. The reason for that price rise is because the time is now to start taking action on this. If you leave it until 2 weeks before, you're just not going to have time to get your head around it, to know exactly what you need to do that data inventory, to go and start a re-engagement campaign and get your fresh consent. In the pack, there is an email that you would send to get that fresh consent and your the wording for your tick boxes, etc. And so now is really the time. We've got 2 months to go, and now is the time to start taking steps to work towards compliance. And one thing to note, actually, is that the ICO are starting a public campaign about this next month for consumers. So your customers are going to start getting more savvy about this, and they're going to start asking you questions. And if you can say you're on top of it, you're working towards compliance, then that's a lot more attractive to your customer than being completely blank about it and not knowing where you are with it. We've already seen in my group that people, certainly processes in the States, who've thought it doesn't apply to them and they're not going to do anything, they're losing customers. And we've already seen in the space of a few weeks, just from the volume of customers who have said, well, I'm not happy with that, they're already changing their mind about complying with GDPR. So I think in the next month, more people customers are going to start asking questions. So it'll be to your competitive advantage to be on top of this.
Yeah, well, thanks so much. And we're certainly going to be getting a set of resources from Suzanne. We're definitely going to be buying that. And so if you're listening, so you're saying does the special offer only go to Good Friday? Is it still open?
Yes.
On Good Friday, or is it before Good Friday?
No, before Good Friday, so that they're trying to incentivize people to take action before the Easter break.
Okay, we'll see if we can get this up a little bit early then, so that people can take advantage. But I'll certainly put a link in the show notes. And I just wanted to thank you actually for everything that you're doing to help everybody understand, because I'm just seeing so much panic, so many questions, and like I said at the beginning, people saying I'm just not going to bother with email marketing, which, you know, that's how we make money in our businesses, that's how we make sales. And for me, it just feels like, okay, this is a bit, you know, it's a bit inconvenient. It's going to take a little bit of time to get your head around it and to get it all in shape. But actually, you know, this is perfectly doable and it's important. And like you say, it's just kind of good practice. So I would hate anybody to be put off, like, you know, you're saying some people were saying they're going to close their businesses down or be put off from selling because of this. It feels to me like it's doable. It's just about getting compliant.
Yeah, no, it's definitely doable. And I certainly welcome it as a really good opportunity for me to look at my email list, look at my marketing and make it better.
Brilliant. Thanks so much for everything you do. And thanks for sharing your knowledge on the show. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening. And if you enjoyed the show, don't forget to subscribe on iTunes or wherever you're listening right now. And also don't forget about my podcast guide. So this lists all of my podcast episodes to date. They're categorized by theme. So whatever challenge you're facing in your business, then you should be able to find a podcast episode, or in fact, several, to help you solve your problem. And you can get that at janetmurray.co.uk/podcast guide. So that's janetmurray.co.uk/podcast guide.